Explicit content is found in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. Melissa Lucio is one of only six women on death row in the state of Texas. She is to be executed by lethal injection for the crime of capital murder against her very own child, Mariah. Robert Alvarez was Melissa's live-in partner and also Mariah's father. While Robert looked the other way, Melissa was convicted of abusing Mariah so severely over the course of several months that it ultimately led to her death. Okay, on to the show. Melissa Lucio was born on June 18, 1969. She was born, raised, and lived in Texas her entire life. She was the oldest raised alongside her five siblings, two sisters, and three brothers. Melissa's sister, Sonia Valencia, recalls her being funny and very smart at math. Their childhood growing up was normal. Like so many other children of that time, they grew up playing outside, making mud pies and playing hopscotch and hide-and-seek. Their mother worked at night, and their stepdad cared for the kids in the evenings. Their mom kept a very clean home, and all of the kids had chores they were expected to do. Sonia remembers herself being the troublemaker of the girls, while Melissa was more of a people pleaser. Melissa married at a fairly young age and had seven children with her first husband. Melissa's first husband was an alcoholic and very abusive towards her. When he got drunk, the abuse got worse. Because of this, the marriage fell apart and she would later get divorced. She eventually began a long-term relationship with a man named Robert Alvarez. Despite never marrying, Robert and Melissa had seven children together. Five of their kids were born before Melissa would eventually be imprisoned. Their twins were born in October 2007, during the time Melissa was jailed. Robert was a drug addict, and he brought those addictions into their marriage. Soon, Melissa would be doing drugs too. During their relationship, Melissa struggled with depression and drug abuse. A few of her children were born drug addicted to cocaine, according to CPS reports. Child Protective Services, or CPS as they are commonly referred to, was frequently involved with the family. There were often allegations of abuse and neglect. CPS had many contacts with Melissa and her children between 1995 and 2007, when her then youngest child was killed. CPS has reports on the family amid allegations of abuse, neglect, or both in 1995, 1996, 1998, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2004. When you know the end of this story, it's hard to ignore CPS's role in it. On September 21, 2004, CPS removed five children from the home of Melissa and Robert. The children, Robert, Gabriel, Adriana, Sarah, and Mariah, ranged in age from 3 years old to 3 weeks old. In an affidavit filed by a CPS worker, the conditions the children were living in could only be described as complete squalor. Specifically, CPS Specialist De La Garza cited, quote, unsafe living conditions for children. There were ants crawling on the floor and mattress where the newborn slept. The affidavit continued stating, there was a fan in the window that had no cover. Inside the refrigerator, there was only a rotten head of lettuce, a carton of eggs, and a plastic container of mayonnaise. Signs of physical abuse were apparent on all of the children. Each child appeared to have bite marks in various sizes and bruising in varying degrees of colors. They were all filthy, and the youngest were not even wearing diapers and had dried fecal matter on their bodies. The children were placed in foster care during this time, because there were no family members that were present to care for them. Melissa and Robert did, however, participate in services with CPS, and eventually, the five children Melissa had with Robert along with three of her other children, were returned back into her care on November 21, 2006. There were 12 children, all living in a small apartment with Melissa and Robert. Robert worked, but they also received a significant amount of welfare and assistance from the state of Texas. It was reported that Melissa and Robert were receiving nearly $5,000 a month in assistance from the state. Melissa was reported to be a drug addict, but she claimed to be clean after her children were returned to her. However, she did say that Robert was still using drugs. It is possible that Melissa and Robert would have still been financially drowning, even with his income and the assistance they received from the state. There are many speculations that could be made about what went on in that home, but one thing is clear. The abuse that Mariah suffered led to her death and would subsequently land Melissa on Texas's death row and put Robert in prison for 4 years. On February 17, 2007, at approximately 7 p.m., police were dispatched to the home of Robert Alvarez and Melissa Lucio. They lived together in an apartment with nine of Melissa's children, five of them reported to be Robert's. The couple was in the process of moving to a new apartment. Robert had contacted 911 because he noticed his youngest child, 2-year-old Mariah, was not breathing. According to Robert's testimony, he had tried to perform CPR on her, but didn't think it was helping, and he later started to have a panic and said everything happened so fast. He said that earlier in the day, Melissa told him multiple times upon his asking that Mariah was fine and that there was nothing wrong with her. Though he said something was wrong with Mariah, he believed Melissa because she told him that Mariah was okay. He never pressed further. After the paramedics were called and arrived on scene, they immediately noted that the younger girl was lying in the apartment without anyone near her and was completely motionless. Melissa showed little to no emotion over the state of her younger daughter. She told paramedics that her daughter had fallen down a set of stairs outside their apartment building. She thought her daughter seemed all right at first, so she brought her back inside the apartment and didn't report it. It was later that afternoon when Robert had returned home from running errands that he checked on the little girl a few times. The last time he checked, she was not breathing, which is when he began CPR and contacted 911. In his statement to police, he said that if he felt he had taken her to a doctor sooner, she might still be alive today. Little Mariah Alvarez was transported to the Valley Baptist Medical Center in Harlingen, Texas, where she was pronounced dead. Doctors at the hospital noted the horrific conditions of her tiny body. The little girl showed many signs of abuse that were in different stages of healing. She had bruising all over her body, and doctors reported bite marks on her back. One of her arms had been broken approximately 2 to 7 weeks before her death, and she was missing portions of her hair where it had been pulled out of its roots. The physicians at the hospital who looked over Mariah's body stated that this was the absolute worst case of child abuse they had ever seen. Mariah's ultimate cause of death was listed as blunt force trauma. The same evening that 911 call was made for Mariah, police brought Melissa in for questioning. They had her in an interrogation room from 10 o'clock p.m. until about 3 o'clock a.m. Melissa told several different versions of her story during this interrogation. It was recorded and would later be introduced as evidence in her murder trial. It would also become a topic of her later appeal due to the fact that the audio of her statement was of low quality. There were also some areas where Melissa's defense team could only define it as inaudible. During this nearly 5-hour interrogation, Melissa told police that Mariah had fallen down the stairs on February 15th, 2 days before the emergency services were called. She later changed her story, stating that she fell on the 17th. For more than 2.5 hours, Melissa maintained that she didn't know how Mariah got all of those bruises and marks on her body. Detective Escalon, who was in charge of the investigation, would testify at her trial about this interview. He said he could tell that Melissa was beginning to see that she was had and that she wanted to confess. He continued to press her because of this. He was firm in his testimony that he could tell just by her body language in the interview that she wanted to come clean. Later on into the interview, Melissa finally admitted to abusing her daughter and other children. She told police that her partner, Robert, had never hit Mariah or the other children. When questioned if it was possible that Melissa's other kids could have hit Mariah, she stated that no one else had ever hit Mariah but her. Police brought her a doll and had her demonstrate exactly how she abused her little girl and to show them what she did. Police continued grilling Melissa in an attempt to obtain a fully detailed confession from her. Melissa would admit that she abused her daughter by spanking her and hitting her. However, she would not admit to killing her. I'm going to pause the case right here so you can hear a word from our sponsor. As detectives continued with their questioning, Melissa admitted to them that Mariah was sick the day that she died. She said Mariah slept most of the day, and when she tried to feed her, Mariah would bite down and not take any food. Many of the symptoms that she described would later be testified to as being similar to those of someone who was subjected to blunt force trauma. According to the videotape played at the trial, she stated that she was afraid to take the little girl to the hospital that day because of all the bruising on her body. She would later also say she was afraid Robert would accuse her of being a bad mother. On February 18, 2007, Melissa Lucio was arrested, and on May 16, 2008, she was indicted on capital murder charges. According to Fine Law, Texas does not officially use the term first-degree murder. Instead, the equivalent is capital murder. Prosecutors must be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant intentionally and knowingly caused the death of another person. The defendant intended to cause serious bodily injury and committed an act that was clearly dangerous to human life, and this act caused the death of an individual. Further, Texas Penal Code also cites additional criteria for an offense to be considered a capital murder offense, which includes the defendant murders a child younger than 6 years old. On May 31st, 2007, she was arraigned on the charges. In the summer of 2008, Melissa went to trial for the capital murder of her daughter, Mariah Alvarez. Several doctors, CPS workers, paramedics, and police testified at her trial. The chief forensic pathologist for the Cameron and Hidalgo counties, Dr. Norma Jean Farley, testified that the blunt force trauma to Mariah's head probably occurred within 24 hours of her death. She also testified that the blunt force trauma in this case basically means beaten around the head with something, an object, a hand, a fist, or slammed against something. She further stated that she did not believe the injury to be consistent with falling down the stairs. The videotape of her police interrogation was also introduced, which would prove to be an integral part in the prosecution making their case. Prosecutors wanted to show Melissa's odd behavior at the scene. They wanted the jury to see the pattern of abuse at the hands of Melissa, as documented by her many CPS interactions. Prosecutors needed the jury to see the old injuries of the two-year-old, bruised limbs and damaged vital organs and old broken bones. The most damning evidence came from the investigators who spent direct time with Melissa. One of the detectives in the case testified that while he was transporting Melissa to the dentist's office in order to obtain dental impressions to compare to the bite marks on Mariah's back, he overheard Melissa on a cell phone call telling another family member that she was responsible for Mariah's death. When it was time for the defense to present their case, they were able to show that the investigation was not as thorough as one would expect. While numerous forensic items were obtained for testing, they were never actually tested. This included drug residue found at the apartment, drug testing for Melissa and Robert, and DNA testing on hair and fingernails taken from Melissa. The defense also had expert testimony from a doctor that suggested it was possible that Mariah's injuries could have happened from a fall. Dental molds were made from all of the available family members, but none of them matched the bite marks on Mariah's body. However, this may have been due to the marks on Mariah's back having been made from teeth scraping against her skin rather than a bite down. The defense team pointed out that there was a total of 5 different police officers questioning Melissa without an attorney present. She answered their questions, but she had been awake for almost 24 hours. She was understandably tired and stressed. As noted in appeals documents, Melissa's lead defense attorney, Peter Gilman, said in his final arguments that his client had not confessed to murdering her child. However, he would never call her Mother of the Year. He told the jury that Melissa herself had only been told about Mariah falling down the stairs about 24 hours before her death. He said that Melissa wasn't home when Mariah fell because the family was in the process of moving to another apartment. He went on to say that while his client was guilty of child abuse, she wasn't guilty of murder and hadn't confessed to such. Despite his impassioned pleas to the jury, Melissa Lucio was found guilty of capital murder against her little girl, Mariah Alvarez. On July 9, 2008, court would reconvene to proceed to the penalty phase of the trial. When he met with reporters that morning before court, Cameron County District Attorney Armando Villalobos indicated that his plan all along was to ask for the death penalty. More testimony was given during the penalty phase of the trial. During this portion, both sides are required to show the jury the likelihood of Melissa reoffending after serving her prison sentence. This would help determine if the appropriate sentence was life with the possibility of parole, life without the possibility of parole, or the death penalty. Because of the long-term ongoing abuse, the prosecution wanted Melissa to receive the death penalty. Prosecutors wanted to show any possible negative behaviors they could in order to justify the death penalty rather than a life sentence. Evidence about her negative behavior in jail was introduced, including discipline she had received for fighting and for having contraband. The prosecution also brought up Melissa's conviction for drinking and driving. Melissa was arrested for a drunk driving offense before her daughter died, but wasn't convicted and sentenced until after she was arrested for Mariah's death. Melissa's defense had to show that there were mitigating factors to Melissa's behavior and that she was not a danger to the society at large. They presented expert testimony from psychologists who claimed that Melissa had alleged she was a long-suffering victim of both sexual and physical assault. Her mother's boyfriend had sexually assaulted her at a very young age. Since she was about 16 years old, she had been exposed to drugs and violence. Her defense also argued that if the state considered Melissa to be so dangerous, then why was she allowed CPS supervised visitation with her twins during her incarceration? After deliberating once again, the 12-person jury came back with a decision to sentence Melissa Lucio to death. On July 22, 2008, Melissa was formally sentenced to death by lethal injection. She was the first woman ever in Cameron County to be sentenced to the death penalty and only one of 10 in all of Texas at the time. In September of 2009, Robert Alvarez went to trial on his charges stemming from the death of his daughter, Mariah. Robert was charged with causing serious bodily injury and failing to seek medical care. He alleged that he was out running errands on the day that Mariah was killed. Robert told officers that on February 17, 2007, he, quote, knew something was wrong with his little girl. He checked on her several times that evening, and on the last check, he found her not responsive or breathing, He knew he needed to do something, so he picked Mariah up and placed her on the ground and proceeded to perform CPR to try to get her to breathe again. He called 911 and then continued CPR until the paramedics arrived. He said he asked Melissa if their little girl was okay earlier, and she said she was. His claim is that it wasn't until he started CPR that he noticed bruising all over his daughter. He was arrested that night and would remain in jail until his trial over 2 years later. It didn't take a jury long to come back with a guilty verdict on the charges. The judge, State District Judge Benjamin Uresti Jr., sentenced Robert the same day he was found guilty. Robert was sentenced to 4 years in prison. Because he had been in prison since the day Mariah was killed, he would only have to serve an additional 2 years in prison. District Attorney Villalobos would later tell reporters that while he was happy with the verdict, he wasn't very happy with the sentence. Melissa would go on to appeal her conviction to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, who did ultimately uphold her conviction. In September 2011, Melissa Lucio lost her appeal in the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. There were 14 points of error Melissa's appellate attorneys suggested were made by the trial court. Among the claims in her appeal, Melissa's defense team had an expert that would testify at the trial to the behaviors that Melissa exhibited during her initial police contact, as well as her police interrogation. Specifically, Melissa's defense team wanted to introduce expert testimony from Ms. Norma Villanueva. The defense team believed, as quoted in the Court of Appeals brief, that Ms. Villanueva could testify to the inability of a battered woman to give a voluntary statement. They also cited in the brief that the essence of Ms. Villanueva's testimony is that Melissa was a battered woman and would have and did tell the police what they wanted her to say. She believed Melissa would resort to battered woman behavior in order to get herself out of trouble. This would include doing or saying anything in order to keep the peace and to take the blame on herself for anything that happened, whether it was her fault or not. The defense also wanted Ms. Villanueva to dissect Melissa's body language with police and CPS workers. However, the trial court did not find Ms. Villanueva's testimony to be expert testimony and determined it was not relevant. Another argument raised in her appeal was that the videotape of her initial interview with police was inaudible during several points of the recording. The state responded to the claim saying that while the recording was not of the greatest quality, it was still completely audible when turning up the volume at quieter points. The state also suggested that using headphones improved the sound quality further. Another claim raised was the fact that the trial court didn't allow a jury instruction that gave the jury the ability to consider a lesser charge. The state countered this claim by saying that the only way a reasonable jury could really consider a lesser charge is if Melissa had admitted to causing the head injury that was made by blunt force trauma. Because Melissa has always insisted that Mariah had fallen down a flight of stairs, she wasn't taking responsibility for the head injury that Mariah died from, and therefore, the jury could not consider a lesser charge. The appellate brief also attempted to minimize Melissa's future dangerousness by citing old case law in which a defendant murdered her newborn child and then became pregnant again, murdering that newborn child as well. That woman's lawyer successfully claimed that she did not pose a threat of future dangerousness to the public, but rather only to her own newborn children. Since the defendant would not be eligible for parole until after her childbearing years, she was not a danger to anyone after her parole eligibility. In Melissa's case, the state counter-argued that Melissa did pose a threat of future dangerousness because of the ongoing and severe abuse to Mariah at her own hands, which led to the child's death. In the end, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals did not find in favor of any of the claims of error raised by Melissa in her appeal, which meant that her conviction would stand. On February 11, 2014, in a surprising turn of events, the Cameron County District Attorney that prosecuted Melissa Lucio and Robert Alvarez, Armando Villalobos, was sentenced to 13 years in federal prison for bribery and extortion. An FBI investigation into Armando Villalobos and others stated that they participated in an ongoing conspiracy from 2006 until 2012 by taking bribes and kickbacks in cash and campaign contributions in exchange for leniency and sometimes outright dismissal of charges. It was found that Armando Villalobos had accepted almost $100,000 in bribes, and he was even using his office to help his personal associates in their own suits against the county. Villalobos was ultimately convicted of one count of violating the Racketeer, Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, also known as the RICO Act, one count of conspiracy to violate the RICO Act, and five counts of extortion. One count of extortion was dismissed upon his motion for acquittal. After his 13-year prison term, he will be on parole for 3 years. He was also ordered to pay nearly $370,000 in fines and restitution. It remains to be seen whether any of his convictions will be overturned as a result of his own criminal charges. Armando Villalobos currently remains in federal prison. Robert Alvarez was released from prison approximately 2 years after his jury trial. As of this recording, Melissa Lucio remains on death row for the capital murder of her daughter, Mariah Alvarez. No execution date has been scheduled. In late April of 2019, I reached out to the Free Melissa Lucio Facebook page run by Melissa's sisters, Sonia and Diane. I asked the sisters to answer some questions that would help me understand the impact of Melissa's conviction and subsequent incarceration. While we often spend time focused on the punishment of the perpetrator, how do you show empathy when the victim and perpetrator come from the same family? I wanted to offer Melissa's family an opportunity to share their side of things and how Melissa's incarceration has affected them. Melissa's family misses her very much. They do not believe she belongs in prison, much less on death row. They pray daily for her release and hope for some positive outcomes in the future. Her family firmly believes that former District Attorney Armando Villalobos used Melissa's low-income status with several children as a way to secure a popular conviction that he could then use for his re-election campaign. They implore anyone who wants to send a positive message to Melissa to contact her, as she is currently in solitary confinement for unknown reasons. Okay, fan club members. As I conclude this episode, my one question to you is, how will you sleep tonight? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCpod, Facebook.com/TCFCpodcast, Instagram at TCFC_podcast, and of course, our website is truecrimefanclub.com. For episode suggestions, email us at tcfcpod@gmail.com. This episode was researched by Brittany Martinez and written by Mary Cole. Audio engineering and original composition for this show was provided by Nico at We Talk of Dreams. Check him out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or WeTalkOfDreams.com.